proceed with the first case for argument, Gilbert v. McCullish, 13-3460. Mr. Zarsky?
May it please the Court. The state of Wisconsin has attempted to justify its civil commitment of Carl Gilbert based on a finding of his mental state that was 2.5 years old at the time that order was executed. This, plain and simple, is a fundamental violation of Mr. Gilbert's due process rights. Indeed, the Supreme Court in Fouché v. Louisiana established the principle that due process requires an involuntary civil commitment be based on a person's current mental state.
Before we get any further, sir, where is your client now?
He is in the Sand Ridge Correctional, Sand Ridge facility.
Is he still serving the sentence, the parole sentence?
No, Your Honor. He completed the parole revocation sentence in August 2010 and at that time was transferred to be civilly committed.
And Sand Ridge is a facility for civil commitment?
Yes, Your Honor.
I see. Thank you.
And I had another question. The Wisconsin statute requires reevaluation of status every 12 months. Was Gilbert reevaluated in accordance with that statute? The record was unclear on that.
The record is unclear about that, Your Honor. Our argument is that by any standard, 2.5 years is not a finding for the requisite mental state to be found. By Wisconsin's own statute, as Your Honor points out, reevaluation is required every year.
The record is also unclear with respect to the nature of the parole violation. What was the nature of the parole violation?
Your Honor, the record is unclear. Again, my understanding is that there was a violation with respect to Gilbert's actions while he was in the process of being transferred between being civilly committed and those proceedings commencing and his serving a parole revocation. So that is why he was transferred back and forth between a prison and a facility to be treated.
That yearly evaluation that my sister just talked about, is that what happens if a person is found to be no longer dangerous? Is that reevaluation self-executing? Is he just released, or does he have to bring some kind of a legal action to get himself released after such a favorable evaluation?
Your Honor, my understanding is that under the statute, he is reevaluated, but at the time he must petition for discharge.
And he has the burden on the petition?
The state has, he has the burden of, or must establish a threshold that there is a likelihood or probable cause that he is subject to release and that he has the requisite mental condition at that time. At that point, the state has the burden of clear and convincing evidence that he remain committed.
And I have another situation related to the parole and what my brother asked about. His situation is really a little unusual because he violated the parole twice. The Wisconsin Supreme Court was concerned that ruling for him would mean a sexually violent person could, by engaging in criminal behavior, terminate his own civil commitment. Isn't that the implication of your position?
No, Your Honor, that's not the implication of our position. The state of Wisconsin had a choice here, and they could have decided to punish Mr. Gilbert and force him to serve a parole revocation sentence, or they alternatively could have decided to forego that parole revocation sentence and proceedings and instead decide that they would choose to involuntarily civilly commit him.
Could we go back for a couple of questions, please, counsel? During the period after the trial in February of 2008, until August of 2010, the 2.5 year period that you're focused on, was there any annual reevaluation of Mr. Gilbert?
No, Your Honor, there was not.
He was in DOC custody?
That's correct.
Was the Wisconsin Supreme Court wrong in its opinion when it said that he was transferred to civil custody in January of 2009?
Yes, Your Honor, they were incorrect.
Okay, can you point us to indications in the record that make that conclusive?
Sure. In the Wisconsin Court of Appeals decision, cited 2011 Wisconsin 61, at paragraph 6, footnote 7, it declaratively states that Gilbert was at that time transferred from the Department of Corrections and civilly committed.
Okay, thank you. Then I thought you said a moment ago that in the subsequent proceedings, the burden of proof was on the state. I had thought that under 980.08, which deals with petitioning for supervised release, which I assume is far more likely than outright discharge for folks who qualify for this kind of treatment at any point, that the person seeking the release has the burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence that he meets these criteria: significant process, substantially probable, he won't engage in an act of sexual violence while on supervised release, etc., etc. Is that right?
That is correct.
So once a finding is made that you qualify for the civil commitment, it is pretty tough to get out.
That is correct. Yes, and so as Your Honor points out, the standard is different. Under supervised release, Mr. Gilbert would have the burden of proof. If he petitioned for discharge and outright release, the burden would be on the state by clear and convincing evidence.
But even to get to that point, he's got to make a substantial initial showing, doesn't he?
That's correct. My understanding is that the court could summarily deny his petition for discharge.
Must allege facts from which the court or jury would likely conclude condition has changed. So, okay. Thank you.
The relief you've requested is Gilbert's release, not a new hearing. Would a new hearing be satisfactory in this circumstance?
No, Your Honor. What we're asking for is a ruling that the Wisconsin Supreme Court's decision that Gilbert's commitment be based on a 2.5-year-old finding of his mental state is unconstitutional and violates his due process. A prior violation of Gilbert's due process rights cannot be cured by any reevaluation or any new hearing.
I don't understand that. I mean, there are plenty of cases where somebody, through the criminal process, may have their constitutional rights violated, their liberty taken away, but the remedy on habeas is not outright discharge, but a new trial. Typically, the order is release unless the state puts him on trial within a certain fairly short period of time. Why is that unreasonable here?
Your Honor, because of the fact that the basis for his initial commitment was unconstitutional. Therefore, if the...
Well, how is it? That's no different from an original trial that was unconstitutional, is it? I mean, a fresh hearing in which the state has to meet the burden beyond a reasonable doubt would seem to solve the problem here, unless I'm missing something.
Well, the state of Wisconsin, that's up to the state of Wisconsin about whether or not they ultimately would like to pursue a new commitment petition. But what we're simply asking this court to do is rule that the basis for Gilbert's initial commitment was unconstitutional because of the stale mental finding.
Well, that main case you rely on, the Fucha case, the state conceded that he wasn't mentally ill, but here we have a jury finding that Gilbert had a mental disorder. Isn't that a really important distinction here?
No, Your Honor, it's not an important distinction. The important element of Fucha here is that the court focused on the temporal element regarding Fucha's current mental state. And in Fucha, the court found that Fucha could not continue to be committed because he was no longer mentally ill or had the requisite mental state. Gilbert's argument, similarly, is that because there was no current finding regarding the requisite mental state for him to be committed, that commitment was unconstitutional.
Do you want to save some time for rebuttal?
If Your Honors have no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Weinstein?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I think the key issue in this case is whether there's any clearly established federal law that addresses Mr. Gilbert's issue.
Before you get to that, was he evaluated as he was supposed to have been every 12 months?
He wasn't supposed to have been. So the answer to the question is no. There's a statute that suspends the yearly evaluation while someone is in DOC custody. It usually comes up because the person who's been committed commits some sort of criminal activity in the mental health facility. That is, in fact, what the Supreme Court was very much concerned with, because under state law, the state cannot petition if the person is not approaching release on a sexually violent offense or a term of imprisonment of which the sexually violent offense forms a part. So if someone commits a crime in the institution after commitment and after the person is discharged, the state cannot petition again. That's a very difficult proposition. The other thing is, the Supreme Court has never addressed anything like this, not even close. The Supreme Court has never addressed even whether a criminal conviction and a civil commitment can run at the same time, although one can infer that from Vitek, but they've never specifically held that, and they certainly have never held that a criminal offense either before commitment while a person's awaiting trial or after requires termination of the civil commitment. And without that, there's simply no basis for habeas relief.
Mr. Weinstein, you said a moment ago that the state, if I understood you correctly, may petition only as the person is approaching release.
Yes. The statute requires the person to be in custody, and I think it's fair to infer that means custody on a criminal offense. And the criminal offense has to be at least in part, either concurrent, consecutive, some part of that custody has to be for a sexually violent offense, which are defined by the statute. Yeah,
my concern is about timing.
Okay.
Does the statute, as you read it, and maybe I'm missing this, but does the statute prohibit the state, let's say a person is sentenced to 10 years in prison for a sexually violent crime, does the statute prohibit the state a month after commitment to the Department of Corrections from filing a petition for civil commitment under Chapter 980?
No, not now. It did
permitted?
One time.
Is it permissible now?
Yes.
All right. So in that context, let's suppose it's a month into a 10-year sentence. There's a new jury. State meets its burden. This person is sexually violent and dangerous. Does that commitment order remain in effect, and then can it be executed 10 years later?
Under the Gilbert Hunt decision, I think the answer to that question is yes.
How do you reconcile that with the Fouché requirement that civil commitment be based on current conditions?
Well, in my view, the current mental condition means at the time of the commitment, and the commitment is the order that puts him in the custody of the Department of Health. Now,
What did the earlier statute say? You said there was a change in the statute.
Yes. Originally, the statute required the state to file within 90 days of release, but that part of the statute's been repealed.
So, back to Fouché, the person in question may be held as long as he is both mentally ill and dangerous, but no longer. How would a 10-year-old finding be relevant and constitutional under Fouché?
Well, I would. The question is whether or not, I don't think you can ever have a situation where the current finding is at the moment that somebody.
We'll worry about the difference between a month or even 12 months in a moment. How about 10 years? Consistent with Fouché or not?
I think under state law right now it is.
I'm asking under federal constitutional law under Fouché.
We don't have an answer for that. And you can't answer it on habeas. It has to be a direct appeal.
You think that Fouché would allow it, use of a 10-year-old commitment?
Well, I don't think Fouché is even the case that establishes the principle. The principle is established in O'Connor versus Donaldson. Fouché is a burden of proof case because, as Judge Williams pointed out, Fouché held, the state conceded that the person was no longer mentally ill, yet the Louisiana statute placed the burden on the prison, on the committed person to establish he was no longer dangerous and no longer mentally ill, but of course that was conceded. So Donaldson, which is even older than Fouché, is the case that actually establishes that. But I don't think the Supreme Court has never said how long it has to be between reevaluations. And most states choose a year, but we don't know. And the other thing is, Mr. Gilbert could file a discharge petition at any time. So the day that he's transferred to the secure mental health facility, he can file a discharge petition, at which time he'll get an evaluation. He'll go through a process of the first step is a pleading question about whether or not he adequately pleads. But if he has a favorable psychological evaluation, that's not going to be a problem. And the court then just evaluates whether there's sufficient evidence to support a finding that he's no longer sexually violent.
The abuse here, I mean, it seems to me at least to be fairly obvious. The trial the trial judge imposes a sentence the state is less than happy with. The man is incarcerated. A petition is immediately brought by the state to elongate his stay with the state under civil commitment. The guy, let's say, has a 10-year sentence anyway. The end of the 10-year sentence, his mental situation has changed substantially, but now he has the burden.
No, he doesn't.
Proving he has to give up.
He doesn't have the burden. The state has the burden. The state always has the burden at discharge. Supervised release doesn't question whether or not the person is subject to discharge. I'm sorry?
He's under a commitment order now.
Right, but he doesn't have, if he petitions for discharge, he doesn't have the burden. The state has the burden.
Unless, the court shall deny the petition under this section without a hearing unless the petition alleges facts from which the court or jury would likely conclude the person's condition has changed since the most recent order denying a petition for discharge, etc., so that the person no longer meets the criteria. That's a very substantial burden, isn't it?
No, it isn't. It's very easy, actually. It's a pleading problem. It's a pleading requirement.
So what does he say? He says, I don't think I'm mentally impaired.
Typically, that's
anymore.
What happens. And
his statement is enough. He doesn't need anything.
Well, what happens is in the court, that's enough for the court to order an evaluation.
For him to say, I think I'm fine.
Right. And then after the court orders an evaluation, he'll also be appointed an attorney at the time that the court orders the evaluation.
Is that automatic?
Yeah. And at that time, then, the attorney will come in based on the evaluator and amend the petition, and that's when the court reviews it for the adequacy of the pleading.
And then there's also a provision for a hearing, correct?
It's a trial.
Well,
actually.
No, but...
Oh, the second
step? Second hearing under subsection 2.
Right.
Before that, you get to a trial.
Right.
And that's
to determine whether or not there's any evidence to support the allegation.
Okay.
So that's when the medical reports from the doctors, the evaluations
right.
would come in.
That's
the judge
correct.
Reviews all the whole record at that point. Right.
Right? The whole record.
Mm-hmm. And who has the burden at that point?
The court has never said that there's a burden. It's a question of whether or not the Wisconsin Supreme Court. It's a question of whether or not the court believes that there's sufficient evidence in all the record from which you have a jury question. And if you do, then the person gets a trial and the state has the burden.
I just want to ask you a timing question.
Okay.
Do you agree with Gilbert that August 2010 is the correct date for when he came under the custody of DHS, or is it your position he was under simultaneous custody of both the DOC and DHS after February 2008?
We've never addressed that question directly. Here are the facts of what happened. Mr. Gilbert was determined by the evaluators in the Department of Corrections to be subject to commitment. A petition was filed. When that happens, the state court, trial court, makes a finding of probable cause and enters an order transferring the person from the Department of Corrections to the Department of Health. And then the person is again evaluated by Department of Health personnel. That was the period at which Mr. Gilbert made his first revocation offense, which I think was just a rule violation on the first one. And he then went back to corrections for a short period of time after he had served, I think it was about a year, maybe less. After he had served that, he was transferred back into DHS custody under the original probable cause order. He again violated, that time I think it was an assault on one of the staff. Not a serious one, but an assault nonetheless. And then he was returned for the 2 year, he was revoked, but he was returned to DHS custody for the trial, and then after the trial, he was returned to the Department of Corrections. The order, the probable cause order, was running all through that time.
So then you think it was more like simultaneous custody?
I think it was, yes.
But it's almost like pretrial detention.
It was all pretrial detention. Yes.
From the context of civil commitment.
That's right. It was.
Okay.
It was. But Mr. Gilbert is correct that the date in 2010 was the date that he was finally transferred out of corrections custody and into Department of Health custody for the last time. And he's probably gone through three or four reevaluations since that point in time.
So he's had those annual evaluations since then?
He has.
We have no more questions. Your time is up. Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time? 1 minute.
It's important to note that Mr. Gilbert's position is that he was serving prison time from February 2008 when that order was committed until August of 2010. Prison is prison. Being committed is being committed. And during the period of that time when he was serving his prison sentence, he was not receiving any treatment as required under the civil commitment statute, nor was he receiving the annual reexaminations as required by the civil commitment statute.
And you realize the dilemma that we have, because you agree, don't you, the Supreme Court has never addressed whether due process requires termination of a civil commitment when there's been an intervening criminal conviction, or whether a criminal conviction and civil commitment can exist simultaneously.
That's correct, Your Honor. We don't dispute that.
And the Supreme Court has not considered a delay between the judgment of commitment and a later transfer of custody to a mental health facility directly?
That's correct, Your Honor. But Fouché stands for the fundamental principle that due process requires a current finding of a person's mental state for commitment, and that did not happen in this case because of a 2.5-year gap. Because of that, his initial commitment was unconstitutional.
And my point, though, is since the court hasn't considered those two issues specifically, you know, we have to look at whether the Wisconsin decision was contrary to or an unreasonable application of Supreme Court precedent. And that Fuqua case is not exactly our situation, is it?
No, Your Honor, but as I stated earlier, Fouché stands for... That's okay. Fouché stands for this general principle that, you know, the current finding of a mental state is required. And we are seeking the application of this general principle to Mr. Gilbert's fact pattern here.
Do you agree with the Attorney General on his explanation of the burdens of proof?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's an important point to note, because if a statutory discharge petition under the Wisconsin Involuntary Civil Commitment Statute, the burden lowers. So if upon initial commitment of Mr. Gilbert, the state had the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that he was to be committed. On a discharge petition, the burden lowers, and the state only has to prove by clear and convincing evidence.
All right, thank you. Thank you, counsel, for the briefing and the fine oral argument. We'll take the case under advisement. I'll call this.